Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. Sudanese officials say Riek Machar is in Khartoum.
The problem is in his leg and chest. He has chest infection and his leg is in a very bad condition because he kept walking for more than 15 days.
And a former minister in South Sudan says the peace deal signed 1 year ago should be renegotiated. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese authorities say South Sudan's former first vice president is in the hospital in Khartoum. Sudanese information minister and government spokesman Ahmed Bilal says Machar was brought to Sudan in what he calls serious condition. Bilal declined to give further details on the condition of the leader of the SPLM in opposition, but confirmed that Machar escaped to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo following deadly clashes in Juba last month and then made his way to Sudan.
Actually, he arrived maybe 2 days ago and he's very sick and he's under treatment. And this is the arrangement. He came from a neighboring country to Sudan, and he has under treatment, and if he wants to go outside for more investigation and treatment, he is free to do that. And if he stayed in our hospitals, we are going to treat him, and we informed our brothers in the south that in this occasion.
Did you manage to see him physically and assess his medical condition?
I am the spokesman. I'm telling you the truth. I have announced that, and this is the truth. He is here in Sudan, and he is under treatment.
What is his health problem?
The problems in his leg and chest. He has chest infection, and his leg is a very bad condition. Because he kept walking for more than 15 days.
And what are hospital authorities telling you since you have been in touch with the medical experts in Sudan?
I'm telling you as a spokesman. My government is treating him under this. Not the hospital to tell you. I'm telling you myself. He's under treatment, and we hope that his condition improves.
And how many other people came with him to Sudan for this medical treatment?
He's alone.
That's Sudanese Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking about Mr. Machar's health conditions. South Sudan's announcement of Machar's presence in Khartoum comes just a day after South Sudan's new first vice president, Taban Dengai, wrapped up his first official visit to Sudan. Bilal was speaking to me this past hour from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. South Sudan's former Minister for Agriculture says the August peace agreement should be renegotiated by the parties that signed the deal last year in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Lamakol says President Salva Kiir has violated the agreement and that Mr. Kiir forced the former first Vice President Riek Machar to flee from South Sudan. Akol says the proposed regional protection force for South Sudan should also be mandated to protect South Sudanese politicians so that they can speak freely in South Sudan.
The regional force should be deployed in Juba to create a conducive atmosphere for the politician to talk. In addition to providing security for the people in Juba, it will also provide an enabling environment for the political groups to discuss the future of the country. Second, all the violations of the agreement since it was signed, such as the imposition of the 28 states, the reconstitution of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, all these must be abrogated. They must be reversed. They must be revoked. Third, all the decisions that were taken since the moment the first vice president was dislodged from Juba must also be declared null and void. Finally, there must be an independent international team of investigation to look into the atrocities that happened since the first week of July.
You were saying that you also want the transitional National Assembly to be reconstituted. You were talking about the 28 states to be revoked. These are issues that are too close to the heart of the ruling SPLM. Does that mean the peace agreement has to be renegotiated?
The 28 states is not in the peace agreement. The peace agreement talks about 10 states. The Transitional National Legislative Assembly, it speaks very clearly about who should be there. So if these are close to the hearts of the people you have mentioned, the agreement is even closer to the hearts of all the South Sudanese.
The government in Juba will bring an argument that what they have done is to save the peace agreement from collapsing, because they will say someone like you and other members of the SPLM-IO fled from Juba, saying that their life is not secured. So they will say they will not have to wait for you.
We did not flee from Juba, for your information. I did not flee from Juba. These things happened when I was outside Juba. But since the peace agreement was abrogated by none other than the president himself, then what do I go to Juba for? The first vice president was attacked, and he was made to withdraw from Juba.
Dr. Lam, I would like to put this question to you. This is a question that a lot of people are asking me outside here. They are saying, are South Sudanese politicians really serious about the suffering of their people? If they are serious, why are they not bringing an end to these problems?
Well, you ask the president. You know, we all of us were optimistic when the peace agreement was signed, and that even if it did not satisfy all the demands of everybody, so people were optimistic that peace will come. But the president has his own agenda, and he's the one who is taking the people back to war. So the responsibility lies squarely on his door.
And at the moment when the responsibility lies squarely on his door, you and the other politicians are also to be blamed if there is no peace in the country.
But what do you blame us for? You blame the person who nullified the peace process. You cannot just be blaming people for the sake of blaming. You blame somebody for the wrong he has done.
Do you foresee any end to this standoff? Allow me to call it that way.
Well, I can see the sense. If the government in Juba sees sense and then it does what every South Sudanese want them to do, the situation will return to normal. If they don't, then they will have to be pushed out. There's no other alternative.
That's Lam Akol, South Sudan's former Minister of Agriculture. Akol and other South Sudanese opposition politicians have been meeting in Nairobi to chart the way forward for South Sudan. He was speaking to me yesterday from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The governor of Wau State says he will talk to armed groups that have been fighting the government forces in the state to end the cycles of violence and revenge killings. While residents are cautiously optimistic, the negotiations will help restore law and order in the state. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Governor Andrea Mayara Cho says he cannot claim to be in charge of a state where some of its areas are not peaceful. Speaking in Wau yesterday after meeting last week with President Kiir, Mayar says government officials will soon engage in peace talks with an armed group operating in former Wau County.
We have been greenlighted by our government at national level, and our president gave us okay in order to start dialoguing with those armed groups within the state. We'll be meeting again with a religious group. This is the second step, and they will be the very people whom we will be sent ahead as an advantage to go and meet these people, to have preliminarily talk with them to find out what are their demands.
A group of youth first took an arms against the government in Wau in 2012, where the former governor of then Western Baragazali State, Rizik Zakaria Hassan, relocated Wau County headquarters from Wau Town to Bagari. In 2013, the group announced they were allied to the SPLM-IO. A Wau citizen who did not want to be identified by name for fear of retribution says he does not believe the talks will work. He argues that Several peace deals have been signed in South Sudan, but not respected by the government.
I don't have any hope because we have witnessed even around many parts of South Sudan, especially in Western Equatoria, certain peace deals were signed, and yet today we still hear that people are being killed to death.
Mary Stephen is a member of the Wau State Assembly and welcomes the initiative to dialogue with the anti-government group. She says the talks could be a step towards ending the suffering of women and children. Speaking in Arabic, Mary Stephen says she would like women to be part of the peace delegation.
We as women need to be part of the committee because the armed groups are our children. A mother doesn't abandon her child in a good or bad. We need to go and meet them and talk to them face to face.
Baptist Sebit Francis is the former Minister of Information in the former Western Bargazali state. He says the violence has destroyed Wau. Speaking in Arabic, Sebit says leaders must do all they can to end the violence.
A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a step. So I am optimistic that the leadership of the armed group will accept the initiative so that people sit down, dialogue, and avoid more destruction as we have witnessed in Wau.
Nearly 50 people were killed in fighting in Wau town. Thousands of others fled to church, school compounds, and UN camp for safety. Recent government investigation committee concluded that some members of the South Sudan Army looted houses in Wau.
Their presence in churches and UN camp encouraged thieves to go and loot their properties. Some used to loot during the daytime because no one can stop them that don't take this one. Because the owner of the house, if he's not there, the thief will feel free to go and steal or loot.
Governor Mayar succeeded Elias Waya in June after President Kiir sacked Waya and accused him of not doing enough to end violence in Wau. The former governor was vocal about atrocities committed against civilians by inert members of South Sudan Army who were deployed to provide security for residents and got caught up in an inter-ethnic fighting in Wau town. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Some church leaders in South Sudan are expressing concern about the conditions of internally displaced persons across the country. The leaders are criticizing the government for allowing hundreds of thousands of citizens to live in a horrible condition at church and school compounds. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
Hundreds of IDPs are languishing in church and schools, compounds, and UN protection of civilian sites, too afraid to return home due to insecurity. In Wau, nearly 5,000 residents who fled their homes when fighting broke out between government forces and armed group in June are still sheltering in the overcrowded compounds. Monica Ilario took shelter at a church compound in Wau. Ilario says she will only return to her home when peace is restored across the country.
Me personally, I'm staying here in the church because I'm fearing my life. I don't care whatever they take. They can take all my property, but if I'm still alive, I can still get these things. I'm not thinking even going home unless, like, I see the sign of peace all over South Sudan, because like all of the country are facing the same problem and the insecurity is still, especially the site where we are.
John Lina Sinju is another IDP at Wau's church compound.
The government is saying people should go back home. We need them to provide security, where people can move without being looted as before. We have the interest of going home.
Church compounds in Lol State's Raja County is one of several areas where thousands of civilians have sought refuge. In Juba and Malakal, hundreds of thousands of people who fled the fighting first in December 2013 and again last month are staying at UNMISS protection site. Father Richard Inglisi is a Catholic priest in Raja where thousands of displaced residents are sheltering at churches and schools. Speaking in Arabic, Father Richard says children and elderly people are dying from malnutrition and diseases.
The diseases that are here in the camps include malaria, cough and diarrhea. especially for children less than 2 to 3 years, is most affected. Also elderly people. These people are occupying Kumboni School, both primary and secondary, where there are nearly 18 classrooms and staff rooms. Meanwhile, others are sheltering in the open spaces at the parish.
Last week, 2 children died at Raja Church compound, according to Father Richard. He says the government must stop the violence so that the suffering ends. In Wau, more than 5,000 people are sheltering on church premises. Santa Loku Pio is the auxiliary bishop of the Juba Archdiocese. Bishop Loku told hundreds of faithful during Sunday's Mass that the country's leaders must work for peace and ensure people return home safely. And he stopped telling the rest of the world that everything is fine in South Sudan.
And this is the biggest mistake we have made in this nation. To allow our own brothers and sisters to be quarantined, and we mercifully go around and say, we are all right, we are not all right.
Bishop Loko says the condition of those living in UN camps are no different than inmates in a prison.
Our brothers are in the prisons of the UN. They must come out. The prophet is saying those chains will have to be removed. They have to be removed, and they must be removed, because we are brothers and sisters.
The UN estimates that 1.61 million South Sudanese have been displaced internally, and 720,000 others fled to neighboring countries due to the humanitarian crisis. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at efforts to eradicate polio in Africa. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think about skin bleaching?
For us, because I'm black and I'm satisfied how God created me.
For me, it's not good, because when we look at the disadvantages of skin bleaching, for example, skin cancer and several other things. For example, when we see people have bleached and the effects they have when they go under the sun, we look at it and we say it's certainly not something good.
I'm a black, so I don't need to change my skin, because I am very satisfying for this skin exactly. I can even give them an advice. If you use those products to change your skin, somehow not good, because it can even bring some permanent disease like cancer.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about polio. Nigeria was on track to becoming a polio-free country, going more than 2 years without a reported case. However, earlier this month, the Nigerian government confirmed that 2 children have been diagnosed with the disease. Now, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has launched an initiative to make sure the West African country is free of polio once and for all. In an exclusive VOA interview, health reporter Linnell Modu asks Bill Gates why he believes polio can be eradicated despite this recent setback.
It was very exciting that we went 2 years without any cases, and the idea that there's this area up in the northeast of Nigeria around Lake Chad where we found these 2 cases, that's a disappointment. We were engaged in a very aggressive effort to get vaccines out to as many children as possible in that area and get the number back down to 0.
When we look at the big picture, it is one thing to interrupt transmission. It is another thing to stay polio-free. So how does Africa sustain the hard-won gains in keeping polio at bay to be declared polio-free one day, really?
Well, the good news is that the intensity of the campaigns has been maintained. Nigeria, at one point, was over half the cases in the world, and many people said to us, hey, can you really succeed in Nigeria? If we go and look at the level of immunization, even up in the north where the health systems are more challenging, we've got that at quite a high level. So if we can get rid of this pocket, then it'll cement the change. In parallel, we're still working in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And so we feel really good about where we are despite this setback. We've got a great team up there. The government's working with us. We need to access kids, and we need for people to understand the importance of getting all the kids to take this oral polio vaccine.
And you mentioned Pakistan and Afghanistan. So could you elaborate a little more on what the foundation is doing in these two countries that are still endemic? And also a country like Ukraine that witnessed an outbreak last September.
Yeah, fortunately, the Ukraine thing looks like it's under control. So both in Nigeria and in Pakistan, Afghanistan, our main challenge is that we have kids who the vaccinators have a tough time finding and reaching those kids in an insecure environment can be very complex. And so we really need to understand where the kids are. We need teams that are very competent going out with these vaccines. And then the numbers have come down in Pakistan and Afghanistan. So far this year, we've had 19 cases. So even adding the two that we just found in Nigeria, this is by far the lowest year of polio cases ever. And we're getting smarter all the time about how we find the villages, how we reach out to the traditional leaders. Obviously, we're going to need great partnership with the governments in the region, particularly up in the northeast in Borno.
Now, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has supported the campaign for a polio-free world with about $3.5 billion, at least. What do you perceive as the organization's biggest accomplishments in eradicating polio?
Well, when this all started, it goes all the way back to 1988, there was a commitment to show that eradication can be done. So having success here is important, not just for polio, which is literally reducing millions of kids that would have been paralyzed, but also for building better health systems and showing us how to go after future eradications. So we're very gratified that the case numbers have come down. We've had great partnerships.
Bill Gates is co-founder of Microsoft, and along with his wife, co-founder of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He spoke with VOA's health reporter, Lino Momudru. The Torit Urban Water Supply and Sanitation Project plans to provide safe drinking water to hundreds of homes and government institutions in the Imatong state capital, Torit. The project, which is being funded by the German government, will provide nearly 60,000 cubic meters of water per day for residents in Torit. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
According to state officials, only 18% of the estimated 52,000 people residing in Torit have access to clean drinking water. Most residents drink untreated water collected directly from the nearby Kinati River. Oyito Baptist Habihoy, director of the Torit Urban Water Supply and Sanitation, says the project pumps clean water to dozens of institutions, including the Torit Civil Hospital. Habihoy says with the help of the German government, they launched the water project in May at a cost of 13 million euros.
We are so far, we have moved, we have left almost the hospital. We have moved that site of Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning of Imotong State. We have also moved to the Ministry of Education. So we are passing up to Inkas, connecting it to Inkas up to Torit Model Market. And more are still ongoing as the project will continue.
Habihoy says his project engineers hope to bring clean water to most residents very soon, which will greatly reduce the risk of contracting waterborne diseases like cholera. Habihoy says residents and institutions should be able to pay some money for clean water.
Institutions are going to be applying. They have to apply so that we connect them. In turn, they have to pay something to make this company lively so that the water and the human resource can be paid and we can have to buy other, chlorinating, agency for making good water to the people.
Abbot James, director of Torit Civil Hospital, says connecting water pipes to the hospital allows the hospital save money it spent on fuel for a generator that used to pump water throughout the hospital.
Well, crisis, sometimes you go to the state all fuel stations are empty without fuel, and it is making the hospital very difficult to run the hospital without water. It will be another very big achievement for us, the hospital. One, we can receive water whether there's no fuel, which means two, it will also reduce the expenditure of the hospital.
James says most patients rely on one borehole at the hospital, which sometimes breaks down. Tori Civil Hospital nurse Fiki Lake says she is grateful that the hospital will now have a sustainable water source.
We have one borehole, and it is serving the whole of the wards in the hospital. And we are trying to use it, but sometimes if it rains, we have also some tanks which can collect water, and some, when there is no rain, we request them to come with water from home. They are co-patient, they normally bring water, like hot water, like dizzy delivery mothers, we prefer them to bathe the hot water.
Dorit resident Achiro Betty says the water network will reduce congestion at boreholes.
People can be many in getting water, so others, they can't stand for long.
The Torit Water Company says most Torit residents should be hooked up by the end of January. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
We are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up is South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam with our top stories.
Thanks, John. A top Sudanese official says Riek Machar is resting in a hospital in Khartoum. Sudanese information minister and government spokesman Ahmad Bilal says the former first vice president was brought to Sudan recently and says he is in serious but stable condition. Bilal declined to provide much information on Machar's condition, but did say he had some sort of chest infection. The leader of the SPLM in opposition was in hiding for several days after fighting broke out in Juba between SPLM forces and those loyal to Machar. He later escaped to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo and this week made his way to Sudan. South Sudan's former minister of agriculture says the peace agreement signed by Machar and President Salva Kiir a year ago should be renegotiated by the two parties. Lamba Cole says President Kiir has violated the agreement and that Mr. Kiir forced Machar to flee from South Sudan. Cole told South Sudan in Focus the proposed regional protection force to be deployed to South Sudan should also be mandated to protect South Sudanese politicians so that they can speak freely in South Sudan. And finally, some church leaders in South Sudan are expressing concern about the conditions of internally displaced persons across the country. They're criticizing the government for allowing hundreds of thousands of citizens to live in wretched conditions at church and school compounds. Hundreds of IDPs are languishing in those church and school compounds today. That's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Sudan Mujahja by Gordon Kong.
Belena, Sudana, Belena, 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 Taban, Mindraman, Yarabuna, Taliju Payana, Belena, Mamurta, Sudan, Mujaja, Mafira, Lena.
We've been listening to Gordon Kong with the song Sudan Mujahja. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yeah. chen darta, galbi mi chen darta.